Hey, yo, what is a cipher?
In urban music especially, they try to, you know, they box us. You know, meanwhile, everybody else could do, be creative, and Norah Jones could do, you know, whatever, and Sting could do this. And then I got to just be one fucking cutout, cookie cutter, fucking coon jigsaw thing. That's whack.
The knowledge of the cipher is to enlighten you.
Where you think the cipher come from?
The gods.
Because you tried to jump the cipher and it goes this way.
Welcome to The Cipher, a weekly podcast bringing you talks with the most interesting figures in hip-hop and culture. I'm your host, Sean Sotaro. This is episode 186, a talk with Rascass. Ras is a California-based rhymer who is one of the most well-respected and critically beloved artists in the genre. He's been wowing fans with his dense, complicated literary lyrics, often packed with historical references, since the mid-1990s. His now-classic debut, Soul on Ice, was released in 1996, and he's put out a slew of extremely well-regarded solo and collaborative projects since then. But right along with his talent has been a near-equal amount of record label issues, and occasionally legal ones. Two of his early aughts albums, Van Gogh and Golden Child, remain unreleased to this day. He also spent almost 2 years behind bars in 2008 and 9 for issues relating to a DUI. But all that is behind him, and today Ras is stronger than ever. His latest album is Intellectual Property, and Soul on Ice 2 is coming soon. We sat down with Rascass at Crosstown Studios in Harlem. If you're curious about any of the songs we're playing during this episode, visit thecyphershow.com to find a complete list and the show notes. While you're there, sign up for our monthly newsletter to stay on top of what we're up to, on the air and in the wider world. And now, here's my interview with a vampire... with Rascass. Funny thing about this show is we love Paul Stewart. Every time his name comes up, I say something that gets him pissed off. I get an angry voicemail.
Really? So,
because I haven't talked to him for a few months, I figured we would start there.
Let's start from Paul.
Yeah. So you mentioned on the new album that he tried to sign you to Delicious Vinyl back in the day.
Studio had a deal with Delicious Vinyl. Paul Stewart put me on. Saw Imani and Romine. San Fran introduced him to Paul. Brought him upstairs. They did your mama a cappella. No song. Crashed my shit. Drunk driving. Juvenile hall. Now we gone. Far Side got that deal. Shooting. They keep running away. Video when I got home.
He gave me, he was managing me, basically. I was a very not trusting kid. So
How old were you around then?
Honestly, 15-ish, 14 to 15. But I was acting 17-ish or something like that. So, God, Paul always looked out for me, DJP. So, basically, he got me a situation and with this, you know, they had brand new heavies or whatever, and they were interested in some rap. And I had a situation potentially brewing with Delicious Vinyl. And then I fucked up. And well, before I fucked up, I went to, I fucked up. I knew I was going to jail at some point. There was the Gavin seminar in San Francisco. And I was upstairs. Our rooms were like all kind of adjacent to each other. So like it was DJP and Malik Levy, you know, all these, you know, basically the whole crew of like kind of execs, up and coming guys in Los Angeles and little old me. I went downstairs to get a burger or something. And when I went outside, I saw some friends of mine who I knew from LA dancing, you know, when I used to break dance and shit like that. So they didn't have credentials and they couldn't get inside the hotel. The hotel was like basically locked unless somebody escorted you in. And it was Imani and Roma from the Far Side. And they're like, man, we want to get a record there. I was like, well, I don't know. I mean, I got some, like the homies upstairs, like they work at different labels. I mean, you can come up and whatever, you know.
And that's when they did their hotel room audition that we've heard so much about.
The legendary hotel.
I heard about that from two different people already.
From episode 144, here's Adrian Miller.
We get up there and Raz's manager, Lano Brazil, he was just like, hey, I want you and Paul to co-manage this group with me. So Raz, my friend, Lano, my friend, got us in this room, and we walked in the room, and these guys were jumping around. They were so excited. They were super amped. It was a twin beds in the room, and they did your mom's, like, jumping around on the beds.
After this episode aired, Paul called us and wanted to make sure the truth about what actually happened that night was known. Here's what he had to say.
I was upset because initially, you know, you guys' first podcast with Adrian Miller, the title was The Man Who Discovered the Far Side and Coolio. And it's well known that I discovered both those groups. And I'm a very humble person, and I don't believe in taking credit for anything I didn't do. And I get upset when people take credit for things that I did. And, you know, Adrian was a very employee for my company for a very short amount of time. And he was around some of those times, but he had nothing to do with either of those groups getting signed. So it was very offensive to me. And when I heard the Razzcaz interview, who obviously brought the Far Side up into the room where I met them, you know, he was giving me props and all that stuff like he did. And then I heard you guys interject Adrian's name, which he didn't bring up at all. And it just really upset me because it's furthering this lie that Adrian Miller had something to do with getting the Far Side or Coolio signed. So it was disrespectful to me. I spoke to Raz after, and he agreed with me that he didn't know who was in the room and certainly wasn't trying to co-sign that Adrian Miller was in the room or had anything to do with getting the Far Side signed because he was in jail when all that happened anyway. So, but I just, you know, I'm not trying to, like, create no beef or start no stuff. I just wanted to correct the facts, so. That's really all I want to say about it.
And of course, from way back on episode 57, here's how Paul described the night as it actually happened.
Smoking, we're drinking, everyone's really faded. And Razzcaz, who was a dancer at that time, and the Far Side were dancers, knew the Far Side. And he brought him up to the room as he worked with this guy, Lano Brazil, whose room it was they were hanging out in. And they said, and he brought him in, and then Raz was like, yeah, these guys rap or whatever. And Lano... And there was a guy from Tommy Boy in the room, but, you know, who's like a marketing guy. And for some reason he said, well, I had just got House of Pain, their deal. He said, yeah, you should rap. This dude gets guys record deals, you know. And they got in this little huddle and they came out and they started doing a song about your mama so fat. She ate 22 burritos and they're jumping up on top of the bed and everything. And we're just dying. I mean, we're already high as a kite and we're in there just laughing. And you know, and so I got their number or whatever. And I remember the next day I was like, were they really good or were we just like so faded?
Your mom is so fat. Your mama is so big and fat that she can get busy with 22 burritos, but times are rough. I seen her in the back of Taco Bell with handcuffs.
I didn't know you were.
I was responsible for
the hotel.
Yeah. Yeah, wow. Maybe Adrian probably told you. Adrian,
yeah, Adrian
Miller.
Told us. Yeah,
Adrian and Paul. But yeah, that was it. That I brought them up. The Digimama acapella jumping all over the fucking couches. They killed it. I thought it was amazing. And then I ended up going to jail. And by the time I got out, I did quite some time.
September 1990, drunk driving, the light turned red. Somebody hit me from the rear. I hit the brakes, then lost control of the steering wheel. Hit a black Camaro, and that's all I remember that night. I woke up to a 5-0 flashlight. The car that I hit had exploded on impact. One woman escaped when the driver was trapped. He burned to death. Manslaughter off the CYA. Lifting weights in the yard and playing spades all day. Now I'm 18. Hit the county in the mix. Austin 066. By now, Grandpa was crazy and my uncle had died. And me, I'm at the ranch making Pruno and Wayside. In 93, I got probation.
And then I came out. They had already dropped their album and were successful, man. So it was a crazy story just watching that journey happen. So, yeah, man, Paul has always been, you know, a big brother to me, you know. Shit, and he, you know, Roma. Now, I mean, for a while, I was always like, yo, why, you know, can I get some kind of credit? Because I guess we all want our credit, you know. Right. So. I got my credit. You know, it's good. You know, like Romani, Imani, Fat Lip. Everybody's always like, you know, trading like, yo, Razzy is the one. Because they weren't even there, you know, like Fat Lip and Trey. So, right. You know, Romani and them always like, you know, they're like, Razzy is the one that got us. But they all like, man, thanks, Razzy, because you opened the door. And so I wish I would have got a check out of it, you motherfuckers. A little finder's fee, Paul. Banging on these motherfuckers, bro.
And so
joking, but I'm serious.
How does the Western Hemisphere crew fit into all this?
Let freedom ring with a buckshot, but not just yet. First, we need to truly understand the nature of the threat and the pale man walks.
The Western Hemisphere crew included Voodoo, Mean Green, Bird, and Razzcaz. Voodoo started rhyming in 92 and Raz started near the same time. Voodoo would produce three tracks on Raz's debut album, Soul on Ice, Nature of the Threat, Evil That Men Do, and Ordo Bacao.
So during that time period, I haven't seen the people that would become Western Hemisphere for a minute. I'm kind of doing my own thing. Mm-hmm. We just kind of went our separate ways after high school. So I graduated like 14 and a half, 15 anyway, and was kind of whatever. So we all kind of went our separate ways. Bird was around a little bit more around me, and we had been a dance crew anyway during high school. We used to throw house parties, all kind of shit. So we were always kind of on the cutting edge of trying to be either promoters, like something like music involved, I guess, looking back at it. When I got out of jail, ironically, and the Far Side thing is happening, I was just kind of literally like maybe 2 or 3 days into like being home after about a year. I was home and I went to the Fox Hills Mall and I saw him. And I feel like, I'm sorry that I'm saying this all kind of broken up, but yeah. I get home probably it's like Christmas time or some shit. And I'm walking through the mall by myself, I think. And I see Bird and Voodoo and them. And they're like, oh shit, we ain't seen you. And that's why I was about to say, I felt like I had some attitude with them. I threw them some shade. But yeah, because the motherfuckers didn't write me.
Oh.
So, you go through some hard times, you kind of figure out who your friends are. And so I kind of was like, yeah, what up, dog? You know, whatever, whatever. And then, and I was really buff. So I was really feeling myself. And I feel like I beat everybody up. Yeah, man. So basically, we kind of jumped right back in where we started from a year ago, except things had changed. Voodoo had, had management. He got a deal with the Knots. I forgot his name that put out the Knots. He was good people. Danny, great people. I can't remember these individuals' names. Really great people back then. They gave Voodoo an opportunity. He was bubbling, in the underground in L.A. I think he was doing the Strapped, the record on the Strapped, the movie. Might have been an HBO movie, but whatever. He was, like, doing some things. So, they gave me the invitation. Bird was the producer. Voodoo was the rapper. And I was kind of like the second mic. Mm-hmm. And so we kind of jumped back in and
as we did those first singles, like 94, 95.
Yeah, it's like right around then. And that's when I start recording my new music, which is, the Remain Anonymous and all that.
Right.
Western Hemisphere is that clear eye, because now the sun sets across 606 sextillion tons. Come direct, I project like a telepathic hat. 4 meters over sound wave. I come to offer positions like pornographic.
Yeah, and that's...
And that record's just you, Remain Anonymous.
Yeah, Remain.
It might have been billed as you and Western Hemisphere. I don't even remember.
I produced it.
Oh, okay.
So I produced Remain Anonymous, and then me and Bird produced Won't Catch Me Running.
Because rats not strapped, it's like AOL without a hat. Syntax, attack, take cracks, David Horowitz wouldn't strike back. Then I got nice, accidentally stepped on money's house. He tried to break fool into a glass full of ice.
But we were a crew, and I kind of named our crew when we reformatted, and they had Mean Green, who I didn't know from previously, and that became the crew. So the core crew was from previous was me, Bird, and Voodoo, and then Voodoo and Bird kind of brought in Mean Green and to a lesser extent Michael Myers and whoever else. So I looked at Major. There's another dude named Major. Major was dope as fuck. Major actually is really good friends with Taz Arnold. Okay.
Taz Arnold is a producer and musician who is a member of the group Sarah. He's worked with Kendrick Lamar, John Legend, Erykah Badu, Jurassic 5, and more. Viper magazine called him, quote, the most prolific producer and cultural influencer you've probably never heard of.
But we all knew each other. So all of us knew each other, like, period. High school, some junior high school. So anyway, I named it Western Hemisphere. There was nothing to build. The vinyl for Remain Anonymous says Razzcast of Western Hemisphere.
Mm. Yeah, that's what I was thinking of.
We wanted to be a crew. We wanted to.
Yeah, Razzcast from Western Hemisphere.
From Western Hemisphere. Yeah.
And you said you produced that. I know you produced a lot. in your in the early days? Was that just necessity?
No, I really enjoyed, I gained my music appreciation from buying records. Mm-hmm. I didn't come up from a musical family. So I was late to rap and music, period. Rap music was not like something I was ecstatic about at a young age. I drew. Right. I went to, I was like visual artist and like gymnastics and shit. I was like tripping off that shit. I thought it was amazing. And sharks and shit. I thought I was going to be like a fucking, you know, zoologist. You know what I mean? So Jacques Cousteau shit. I thought that shit was fascinating. Dinosaurs, shit like that. Mm. So yeah, music just wasn't my bag. I'm a definitely more accidental. I liked English. I could always write. I can express myself. That was about it. I wasn't musically inclined. We had a piano, and I failed miserably. My mother bought me every instrument. No, my parents bought me every instrument, and I fucking failed. They bought me a fucking flute. I tried everything, man. Guitar, drums, accordion. They took me and put me in accordion class. I tried.
Yeah.
I tried. I was just like, fuck. It's not my thing. So ironically, the fact that I even became somebody that did anything music related, my sisters, when I was 10, my sisters, older sisters, Tamiko and Renee, they tried to teach me how to snap my fingers on beat. I didn't know how to snap my fingers for one. I damn sure couldn't snap them on beat. Fucking hilarious. I'm a black kid with no rhythm. It's fucking fast. Well, I'm
glad that worked itself out over time. It's amazing.
Not really.
Not really. Still.
Not really. I just like, I'm a venter. I just say the shit I really want to say, and I somehow make it fit at the end and rhyme.
Right.
That's kind of my whole spiel.
I kind of wanted to talk about that a little bit more generally. So a lot of people, when they talk about you, they talk about the content or the vocabulary, right? But there's this whole other side of you that people don't really talk about, which is the flow and the rhythm of it. When you first came out, stuff was very dense. It was very of that kind of mid-late 90s underground.
Really, really fast.
Really fast.
Uh-huh. I dispense dope sentences without a prescription. B-fixes to fix the bitches. Who flips linguistics represent?
And the West relevant to relentless sentences. If renegade rebels resent dads, wicked syntax. It's a lot more conversational now.
Right. Wesley Snipes dark, the mind to call Marx. I transform on mics without the all spark. I pull a nigga card like Hallmark, cause they all march, calling other niggas to march like Al Sharpe.
Can you talk about that change?
Well, there's two parts to that. I listen to Biggie, and you know, you're always studying people, and I started realizing, you know, the patterns that there's, you know, what we call two bar phrase, which is just a basic da 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 da. Da, 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 da. You know where the punchline is coming. You know it's going to rhyme. And with that, within that parameter, what can you do with it? Mm. And so people like Jay-Z, people like Mos Def, they, you know, Biggie, they bounce around in that shit, man. You know where the punchline's coming. It's not complicated, but it's the content. And what I realized was that I have some of the most complicated content. I'm doing socio-political. I'm doing historical facts. I'm doing inside jokes. I'm doing just Brooklyn slang. I'm doing gangbanging, prison, selling dope, Yiddish. I'm doing shit. It's way too complicated because people are dumb as fuck. Even when I slow it down, they don't get it. I go bar for bar, very complicated writing. And so for me, my challenge was like, you know, Jay-Z would say, Kiss, keep it simple, stupid. So part of that is that, but it's not to sell the record. It was just like, for me, I mean, I still do it. If you listen to, you know, my new album is Intellectual Property, Solo Nights 2. So I did complicated, you know, really, really faster patterns, but I just lose people. And, you know, it's really insulting when like the tastemakers and the writers are like, dude, I did a song called TV Guide. Smart guy in the PJs, living in Rap City, BT. Together with Spin City, DC. Split my Andy biography, honestly. Only the wise have become survivors. The X-Files among these... And the magazine writer for, you know, Major Hip Hop at the time, Major Hip Hop Magazine said it was over lyrical. And I was like, what the fuck is that?
What am I...
Really? So you can over, you know, Michael Phelps overswam? Like what the fuck is this about? So I knew I was playing a fuck game. You know, I work hard at showcasing all this complicated thought, and then you crown Cornball Jr. the king. So I was like, let me get these, I said it in Van Gogh, you can't feed a newborn, steak.
Giving people levels to digest the data, because you can't teach algebra to first graders, a school of hustler.
You got to chew it all up and shit and, Gerber that shit. Mm-hmm. So sometimes I'm a Gerber in the raps for dumb fucks. Because
right.
I don't want to preach to the choir. I'm trying to talk to people that might need to hear it.
Right.
So part of that is the journey of being, for me, I like the creative aspect of taking these complicated thoughts. I'm not going to simplify my thought pattern, but I'm going to, sometimes I simplify just the delivery of it. Mm-hmm. Just like, okay, break it up.
Right.
Because I don't have to prove to be, like, honestly, one of my favorite rappers, one of the greatest rappers in my opinion, Pharrell Monch. I remember the time he said, he was talking about his new album. And we were, like, sitting in his car and shit. And this is years ago. So we were talking about, like, fucking, bro, 2007. He's like, don't laugh at me. It's simple. I had to slow it down. And he played that show. I was like, this shit is not, nobody's going to think this is slowed down. You're a complicated thinker. You know what I'm saying? Your patterns are, So it's kind of where the bar is here and the average listener, maybe the critics and the Metacritics are here. My peers are here. So if I do even this, most of my peers have already done that. So I'm still kind of, that's what Pharrell was doing to me. It was hilarious. I was like, nobody's going to.
He's like, that's your simple?
That's your simple. I was like, my simple is way more simple. That was the argument. Like, my simple is way more simple than your simple.
Right.
That shit is complicated as fuck. It's brilliant. It's amazing. So that's, to me, it's fun, man. I think rapid fast for the sake of rapid fast is whack. I think patterns are amazing. So Twister and Busta Rhymes, like they do these patterns, with certain people. And I love that aspect to it. Styling is one thing. I like to style. I like to fuck with flows and change the trajectory and, you rhyme on an eighth note and then rhyme on a, quarter note, whatever. Like, that shit's fun. And so for certain records, I'll do that. Like, spit out records, I do that.
To me, that's groupie, call that the whackness. I catch the Holy Ghost on tracks, sounds of blackness. Got your karma on speed dial, the nigga from Green Mile battling me. Forget about it, see now.
But if I'm trying to tell you some historical shit, those are two different things. You need to understand the content.
In Afghanistan was fighting the Russians. Reagan and Bush gave Bin Laden weapons and told them get them bussing. We even called them freedom fighters. Financed the cost with CIA importing cocaine. That whole Iran-Contra scandal, niggas took the blame. Started a war.
So it's just a challenge per record of what I'm trying to accomplish.
Right. One of the other things that makes you stand out is you have a lot of different song concepts, right? You have a lot of, it's not just like, okay, I'm going to have, five songs about rapping and five songs about how bad I am. Or
right,
whatever.
Right.
Right. It's sort of all over the map in terms of song concepts. Mm-hmm. Can you talk about that a little bit? How you come up with different ones and why such a focus on keeping those varied?
It's not really something I do consciously. Most of my song concepts are conversations. They happen from me talking to somebody, making some stupid analogy, and then I'm like, oh, shit. And then they're like, that'd be a good song. I'm like, yeah, that shit would be kind of good, huh? Fuck it. And so, like Interview with the Vampire was literally me explaining. I was explaining after my first album, because people kept saying, are you sad that you didn't sell a lot of records, but you have, acclaimed, but you didn't sell records like fucking Biggie and fucking. And I'm like, why do you keep comparing? Like, you're making me try to feel bad about, fuck, man. Like, I didn't. And I was like, well, look, man, I didn't get the promotions of so-and-so. So the reality is, if I had Jesus and Satan on a record, everybody would want to hear that one, right? But if nobody knew that I had Jesus and Satan on that record, because the Bible is what? The biggest, it sold the most copies of any book ever, right? So if I got these niggas on the album, wouldn't everybody buy it? But if you don't know that they're on there, then nobody buys it. So stop fucking trying to make me feel bad. So that's literally the catalyst of Interview with the Vampire.
There is no God but me. Mathematically, your division. My decision was all the vengeance. I need not mention infinite dimensions. But the human mind's flaw was limited comprehension. I thought you knew. Who else? Lucifer, the library, stupid, the devil himself. He the creator, we all the creation. Guess I'm eternal damnation.
was just me having to tell stupid interviewers to stop making me feel bad and giving them an analogy. Like, I don't judge my music about who bought it or not.
Right.
I judge my music on what I gave and what we all came together to create. Yeah. So how could I hate myself if it came out of my spirit? You know what I'm saying? So yeah, to answer your question, most of my concepts are like life. Like, I go through life and I have some snarky response and then I'm like, oh, that'll make a fucking great song. Yeah. On Earth As It Is in Heaven literally was just saying, yeah, what if I took that literally? Like, my mom made me say this all the time, and then I went to Catholic school and they made me say this prayer. Yeah, on Earth As It Is in Heaven. So how would the fuck would that relate? Like, how do I make that relate to my everyday life?
Right.
As a black kid in L.A.
7, on Earth As It Is in Heaven.
Feeling like a block, cause I've been talking to a burning bush. But I'm not knowing till I fornicated with the hoe and caught the clap. So my first communion consists of bread and wine and doxycycline 100 milligram caps.
It's not complicated at all. I'm blessed that part just works out. And then just to expand on that, I'm a human being. It's not even Descartes' duality of man. What I try to deal with is the human spectrum. We're happy, we're sad, we're confused, we lust. You know, we're in angst. And so I try to cover that. Yeah, I want to talk about a macho. I want to talk about I want money. I want to talk about what am I willing to do for money. I'm not going to do that. I have, you know, I want to talk about religion. I want to talk about, you know, I'm a philosopher at heart. I'm making commentary on myself as well as the outside world. And sometimes I'm making some judgment about what I think is acceptable and what's not acceptable. And I'm kind of putting the mirror up to people and saying, like, is this okay with you? You know what I'm saying? And so that's why I covered the gamut. I think it's really unfortunate that we live in a society where, and it's probably always been like that, where, like, I have to sell you one thing. Like, I'm the L.A. guy that is, you know, angry black guy. I don't want to sell that. I don't want to sell you party boy. You know, that's what I do. If you want the party song, come to me. I don't want to sell you. I sell coke. It's kind of fucked up because in urban music especially, they try to, you know, they box us. You know, meanwhile, everybody else can be creative, and Norah Jones could do, you know, whatever, and Sting can do this. And then I got to just be one fucking cutout, cookie cutter, fucking coon jigsaw thing. That's whack.
Right.
And I find it unfair, and I'm going to fight against it, you know, whether, you know, I ever get the fucking, I will earn my respect one way or another, you know, you know, that's why the third album was Van Gogh. You can try to overlook it, but I will live forever in that sense. And somebody's rediscover the shit in 20, 70 years and say, you know what, this guy is still relevant because people are still fucked up, racist, selfish, sexist.
Yeah.
You know, and my shit will still stand the test of, wow, this guy was calling it like he saw it.
Yeah. I want to talk about imagination and empathy for a second, which is one of the things that, you know, enables you, I think, to write the kind of songs you do.
Mm-hmm.
Specifically on the Blasphemy album, right? You had that song, Too Much of a Good Thing.
Mm-hmm.
It was about the dissolution of a polyamorous relationship,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
Why do I get upset? Coming home with fucking hickeys on your neck. Lipstick on your dress. I'm sure she was hot, but I don't want to hear the rest. They say sharing is caring, so start caring. Share Emily and Sharon.
If that ever comes up in songs, it's, oh, me and my girl and my girl's best friend, and it's like a fantasy out of a bad movie.
Right.
Yours is a little more nuanced approach to something that's usually cartoonish. Can you talk about writing that song a little bit?
Yeah, man. You know what? It was written about somebody I knew, and... yeah, it usually is me and I got two and look what I can do and I satisfy them so much and, you know, whatever. And, I was just like, yeah, that shit can totally blow up in your fucking face. And that's why it's too much of a good thing. Yeah, too much. And, yeah, so for me, I watched him and I kind of, you know, it's somebody I look up to, I got love for. I just thought nobody ever tells this story. You know, nobody ever talks about, like, you got greedy and now you're fucking sick. You ate way too much cake, and now you're sick. And the ironic part is the cake don't really want you. Cake wants the other cake. So that shit fucking sucks.
Right.
Especially if you're emotionally involved and you're in love and they're in love with each other, you fucked up. You open that door in the first place, you know?
Yeah.
So that was the thinking in that particular song.
Okay. And we talked about you produced a bunch of your early stuff, and mm-hmm. you don't really do that anymore. Why not?
Because Patchworks wasn't paying me and they were robbing me.
Patchwork Recordings was Raz's first record label. It released his first two albums and a bunch of singles, as well as songs by his Western Hemisphere crewmates, Mean Green and Voodoo. The label was started by former NFL player Bob Whitfield.
I was going out spending hundreds of dollars buying vinyl and co-producing the songs or producing, and then my friends wanted money too, so the whole money thing became a factor that I felt really disillusioned by people that were taking advantage of me. I felt like my friends mm-hmm. were taking advantage of me. And that the company that was friends too were taking advantage. Like, we did this for free, and then all of a sudden some money's in the play. I go spend, you know, hundreds of dollars on records, find the samples, and then you guys won't pay me, but you got a deal with Voodoo, so you want to make sure he gets paid so that you can get money from me off of him. Yeah, it was just fuckery. And mm-hmm. I just, you know, it was very disillusioning. I mean, the last things I produced were, it was just vinyl. I did, you know, I did Jack Frost.
You got me all fucked up. I'm the abominable loaf. In case you ask goodbye, your record deal was standing under mistletoe. And I'm Mandingo. My cultural experiences don't include Kris Kringle.
And I did Understandable Smooth.
Some of your cats in the game look confused with your butterfly collars and your crocodile shoes.
Gotta pay, dude. Street crew.
You know it's off the hook when 031 is gangbanging in Brooklyn.
Understandable Smooth.
All my live ones, not my shook ones.
I produced Interview with a Vampire. I did a couple. I did Conceited Bastard.
They're popping like Felicia in the mob with shot. Game face on like a goat, so stick yourself pretty, Tony.
You are, you can see your bastard. You are, you can see your bastard.
You know, I would find people that I'd find my samples, I'd have my vision, and then I would find, like, Clev was a guy that helped me on and Flip, my boy Flip.
Mm-hmm.
I ain't fucking with you.
Corvette spine like a kite prison. On the mic, a bomb like nuclear fission. Alphabetic mathematician. Your prerogative is my decision. My lyrication gave me a reputation for giving niggas no get back. Like black reparations. You doing too much. Cause I'ma be rich, nigga. I put that on my two nuts.
And I ain't fucking with you. You're not to be fucked with.
You know, certain records, that we could go in, and I would tend to find the sample and the drum pattern, and then they would build around that, and we kind of envision a chord. So, I mean, it just, you know, I wish I would have, in retrospect, I wish I would have continued to produce. That's something that you can all, you know, potentially I could have still had an alternative revenue stream as a producer.
Mm-hmm.
But they just really left a really shitty taste in my mouth. They were fucked up people, yeah. Which is why it all fell apart.
We've had Saul Williams on the show a couple times,
mm-hmm.
and I once talked to him about a song of his called Black Stacy, where he talks about how when he was a kid, he used to use bleaching cream.
Mm.
Which ostensibly is supposed to be for spots. And,
right.
And as he said, I had one big spot.
Oh, wow.
It's called Ambi, and what it is, it's skin bleaching cream.
Right. But they can't go out and say it.
Yeah, because that wouldn't be fashionable, so it's like blemish removing, and I had one big blemish that I was hoping to, and so, I used skin bleaching cream for about 2 years.
Baby powder?
You talked about the baby using baby powder, yeah, on The Evil That Men Do.
Mm-hmm.
In 81, I remember the night. I covered myself with baby powder so my black ass could be light, cause God is white and Bo Derek is a tent. I hate my black skin. It's just a sin to be a nigga. Then again,
can you talk about that for
me? Yeah. Well, I was really young. I was like six or something. Mm-hmm. So nobody had really told me, per se, that, you know, my complexion was bad. But I think society, they it's engineered where you're going to feel it.
Yeah.
You just feel it, man. And that's, it's sad that, you know, even, you know, with the quote unquote progress we made, that we live in a color coded world still, you know what I'm saying? And I just inferred at a young age, you know, what was pretty and what was ugly. Society helps you. It pushes an agenda of beauty that is totally based on, you know, Nordic view of beauty. It's not even a European one. It's a Nordic view. You know, I watch it happen in all cultures. I don't care if Jew, Gentile, Hispanic, whatever. Motherfuckers ass kiss the light one with the fucking blue eye blonde hair, and that's weird. You know, and you know, how far did you fuck to be blonde hair and blue eye until you not who you are? So it's ass kissing something that, you know, like beauty is beauty. I think I'm lucky enough to find beauty in like all cultures. I know some people that just don't like Asian girls or don't like Arab girls. I've heard people say these weird things or don't like dark skinned girls. I'm like, I like pretty chicks, bro. And I've seen pretty chicks of everything. I'll fuck it. Don't get me wrong at all. So, yeah, man. Yeah, for me, yeah, when I was younger, and then I watched my sons, and I remember the one time when they were like, you know, and nobody told them. So that shit was crazier to watch my sons ask their mom, like, you know, when they were about the same age and say, you know, five or six and say, well, mom's white. And she's not white. She's like the complexion of my mother. She's a light-skinned black woman. She's a Creole from Louisiana. But, you know, they're like, well, mom's white and dad's black and we're brown. Why is that? You know, and like, and that's a shame to say that we're civilized and, you know, and we're still treating children like that. I got my homegirl. It's fucking, it's not funny, but it's kind of funny. My homegirl, Dina Ray, who sang on Eminem's.
Tell them no. They won't let me ever let them go. I'm a sucker, all I gotta say.
I hope she doesn't mind me talking about this. She got nieces, and they're pretty. They're twins. They're little Jewish girls. And one's darker, one's blonde. And I was like, observing them, and I was like, one's the diva, because she's getting rewarded for being the blonde, blue-eyed one, and one's a little dark-haired. And they're both cutie pies, little cute faces. And then Dina one day said, she's acting like a little cunt. You know what I'm saying? Like the little one. So we reward the, you know, society rewards, you know, the fair maiden, mm-hmm. you know, all these things, hair of golden. And like, get the fuck out of here. I'm a history major, so you all was little niggas anyway. So you need to stop. And I'm not niggas. And you were all little black pygmy Africans, and your genetics are there, and everything should be beauty or everything should be ugly. So yeah. I mean, you're not going to make me feel bad about anything. And we need society to stand up for that. And even if they don't, I'm going to stand for it.
One of the things I was thinking about with you, so a figure who comes up again and again in your work, on the new album, you mention him, you named a group after him, is Jimi Hendrix.
Mm-hmm. Chevy Impala, 1965, getting high. Excuse me while I kiss the sky. Excuse me while I kiss the sky.
What is it about Hendrix that connects with you, that resonates with you so much?
Well, for one, he was left hand and he had to learn to play. They said it was impossible. So doing the impossible, he kind of, you know, he symbolizes going against the grain to me a little bit. He's a scumbag in the sense of, you know, he's got like, he was at a Minaj porno when that didn't exist. He's a gangster. You know, he's a rock star to me. He's like the first, he's like a rock star, but documented rock star. Like, and he's from the West Coast. I think he's from like Oakland or something like that. No, I think he's like Seattle. Yeah, he was Seattle. So yeah, West, he's really up there. Like, who even gets popping like that in Seattle? Like, you know what I mean? So yeah, I just think he was like a, you know, he was just an awesome dude. Mm-hmm. And I aspire to be like myself, you know, and you know, some of it is gonna get you in trouble. You know, same thing, the James Dean shit, like, you know, be pretty. Be reckless, you know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. Fuck it, you know what I'm saying? Live fast, die young type shit. But, you know, I don't want the death part, but I do want to pop off and acting up and wilding out and making some memories while we're here.
Yeah.
You know, you play it safe, you get a safe life.
Yeah.
Which is probably boring as fuck. And you're sitting there and you're miserable fucking with your miserable wife in your miserable place with your miserable kids doing your miserable everyday shit. Then you go to a strip club and you spend your fucking miserable couple of dollars for some hot, miserable chick to lie to you. And who wants that life for the rest of their life? That's called long-term suicide.
Right. So, you know, I'm talking to you in New York, right? You're a California guy, you know, born and raised there, but obviously a long-term connection to New York. And in fact, it was some New York people who gave you your first real shot in the industry, right? You can talk about Boot Camp Click, Kid Capri.
Yeah, well, Boot Camp Click didn't give me my first shot. Kid gave me my, same time, you know, really around the same time as Paul, man, and everything else. Like, Kid took a notice to me and just invited me out, Kid Capri. Boot Camp, my demo tape with the Won't Catch Me Running, we had a cassette. And somehow they got it. So they already knew me kind of by the time we, you know, I signed to Priority or before that, just doing like soundtrack shit and having to, you know, come out to New York. So that was just really random and a blessing that they were aware of me. There was no internet. Kid brought me out, believed in me, put me on, he put me on his project and the project never came out. And then later on, he would put me on a new song on his project with Voyage Worth, I think. And his acquisition of riches, like selling bean pies and still fucking white bitch. I'm rap crazy. You better get 50 niggas to blaze me or ace me. Been rhyming since 220 AD. Your food game.
The song One on One was actually a collaboration with Wordsworth's frequent rhyming partner, Punchline.
And it's interesting because I think, you know, for people who only know him a little bit, you think of Kid Capri as like the guy who rocks the party, right?
Right.
Not necessarily as like the connoisseur of like super lyrical rap.
Oh yeah, man. And that's his whole shit. Like he, he had me around. It was crazy, man. He had me around digging in the crates, you know, like fucking, you know, like I was around Fat Joe and Showbiz and AG and OC and, you know, it was just really, really surreal in retrospect to know, all these legendary people I got a chance to meet at such a young age, especially being where I was from.
Right.
You know, like between Coolio, Wino first, Coolio, and Coolio.
Sorry, Wino?
Wino was the producer for Coolio.
This is how we do it.
Brian Wino Dobbs is a producer who has worked with Montel Jordan and Coolio. He is also the owner of Hard Time Records, which put out music by Spice One and Cam.
Yeah, so the dude with the big afro. And Wino is a G from our neighborhood in Carson. So where Absol lives at, where Blue Da Vinci is from, period. Like where Razzcaz is from. Well, not where I'm from, but their neighborhood is called the 190, Delamo. So Wino put me on, like my mom would drop me off, him and Battle Cat, but especially as far as the East Coast part of my evolution and being able to travel out here, Wino got me out here with Coolio. So when I got out of jail at that same time that I'm talking about, you know, Wino was making my demos and Coolio got a record deal and then they brought me out here and I met fucking, you know, I was with Premier. I was with DJ Premier and Albie from Tommy Boy. And, you know, it was just crazy, you know, just that kind of journey, just to be blessed to have all those people, Tretch, that they knew me. Like, oh, Razzcaz, little Razzy can rap good. And then Albie's like, we're not signing you, Razz, because you rap too complicated. You're going to have to come up with some better with some commercial shit and be smart like Tretch and make the shit work. Yeah, it was awesome. Yeah. It was dope.
That's great. And this is something you're kind of looking back on now and on the new record in particular. You're thinking a lot about your history and kind of your legacy now.
Yeah, that's exactly what, you know, that's why it's intellectual property. And for me, it's, you know, about what have I achieved? What am I going to leave as a legacy to my children, my grandchildren, to my community, hip hop, you know, to my people as Black Americans, all that. So it's just me, interpersonal, really thinking about my journey and really, you know, kind of saying, you know, mostly saying thank you. You know, yeah.
I mean,
it's a few.
Speaking of someone you say thank you to on that record, you have, you know, a bit from Sean Price.
Oh, yeah.
On there. Man. You have the Fettuccine Capone.
Yeah, man. Yeah, head. Man.
And Raz Cash with me. He laughed like, you crazy. And then I put monkey bars out because I figured how to do.
This
know, kick some knowledge
fine.
Shit.
Doing you.
Kick some knowledge shit. Still be tough. Make fun of myself. I learned how to do it all. And that was monkey bars.
I didn't realize this, but it seems like when he was kind of developing his style under his own name, right, and his solo project, it seemed like the kind of intellectual side of it, he was, your approval seemed to mean a lot to him.
I don't know if that's the case. We had, you know, people have different relationships and friendships. I mean, honestly, like, I always felt like with me and Sean, we liked and kind of bonded more than, I mean, liked everybody, you know, I liked everybody and looked up and, you know what I'm saying? But yeah, we talked a lot, you know, and yeah, honestly, when he tells that story, one of the nicest things is, like I said, you always want your credit or whatever, you know, but it's dope, you know, cause Sean's no longer here. And it's funny, like about 2 years ago, I asked Sean to do a verse for me and he was like, fuck out of here, I ain't rapping with you. I was like, what do you mean? You know, yeah. And he's like, I'm not rapping with you no more. And I was like, why not? He's like, you rap too good. I'm not doing it. And I'm like, what the fuck does that mean? How many songs have we done, bro? Like, really? And I love him for that because, and then he said, you know, and then really the song with me and Still is a tribute to that conversation.
Right.
You know, he was like, now fuck that. You and Royce, he's about Royce 5'9". He's like, yeah. Fuck that. He's like, fuck out of here. That's his whole shit. Fuck out of here, son. Like, I'm not going to come in third. Y'all two niggas and shit, me and you on the song, I'm dead, always third, nigga. I'm not doing it. I'm like, I don't even fucking battle rap, my friend. Like, you know, like, yeah. I'm not trying to chop your head off. If it's a new guy, I'm trying to get him. But, you know, but he said, he's like, matter of fact, I just did a freestyle, so it's coming out. And then he told me to rap.
I don't do songs with rash cash. I do songs with whack ass rappers with fast cash.
I don't do songs
with Razz Cass.
Yeah, I was like, who does? And then I'm like, yo, fucking Sean, at least he's honest.
Yeah.
Like, he's totally fucking honest.
I have heard that there are a small handful of people he refused to be on the song with.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so I threatened him, I'm totally honest. I'm like, look, man, I was like, you better hope I don't get like Jay-Z, Eminem, Rich, man, because I'm going to never do songs with you. And you don't want to do songs, going to be like, triple platinum, and you're gonna want to get me on the song. I'm not doing shit. I'm gonna buy you drinks. You can ride in my fucking helicopter, everything, but I'm not buying you shit. You know, rapping with you, bro.
Right.
It's like, I don't give a fuck. Right. So hilariously, you know, that played out. And then, like, a year later with the Apollo shit, then I hit him back and I was like, look, bro, I really want you on this album. I got this song. I really want you on this record. But I'm gonna give you two options. So I sent them two. And, hilariously, I was, like, trying to get some ass. I was just a really hot fucking Salvadorian chick. God, she was fucking hot. Anyway, watching Frozen, I was really trying to get some pussy. I was in the theater watching Frozen, bro. And I had sent him the shit earlier. And then, man. And then he hit me back, like, yo. Like, he was calling me, and I'm in the theater trying to, like, I'm getting a cut of him. You know, I'm like, oh, shit. Get this pussy. And I had to leave and talk to him. And he was excited. He was like, yo, I killed both of them shits. I asked him to pick one. So just a blessing, man, for me, all this shit. Like, we don't get to go back and redo. You know what I'm saying? So this is all I got. And it's just awesome to have, you know, those memories of somebody who fuck rap. Like, I really feel like as a friend, you know what I'm saying? Somebody I really genuinely, you know, the rap, hip-hop brought, you know, helped, you know, got me to know him. Initially, but I got to know him differently. And so we had inside jokes, the whole Fettuccine Capone shit. You know, I was Squinjilly Diddy, you know, Rock got a name. So it's all, you know, like, and we would, you know, and that particular day when he was switching, when he was processing some shit, in retrospect, I didn't know they had got dropped. We was just in the Cephalos hanging anyway. I didn't know Priority was not going to put out the next Helter Skelter album. I didn't know that.
Right.
So he was going through his own dilemmas and drama, and I wasn't even aware of that. And we were just talking about rap, and then he said this fucking stupid rap. And it was fucking so stupid. But it was him. And I was like, that shit would work. That shit's funny. And it was that shit. And I was like, Fettuccine Capone, that's your name. He was like, fuck this son of a... And he gunned it. And, yeah, man. And then, like, I went back and got in trouble in L.A. and whatever the fuck I did with my life. And next thing you know, there's Monkey Bars. And I'm like, yo, this Sean shit is dope. Yo,
dress sloppy, but my rap is dapper. Watch Rosewood go outside and slap a cracker. Yo, various styles and various hot shit. Kill the nigga on the train with Barry Sly. They do...
And shouts out to Aguilar, because the one thing, honestly, out of Sean's mouth one time, man, he said this to me. He said, you know, when I try to do my solo shit, nobody would do beats for me. Motherfuckers turn their back on me. And Aguilar was the only motherfucker that was really consistently there giving me top shelf beats. So, you know, shit, he always get my salute for that.
Yeah.
Because if they wouldn't have had that synergy, no Monkey Bars and, you know, I'm sure he would have landed on his feet some other way, but it's dope because that shit is a great journey. And, you know, just proud to be a part of it, yeah. Honestly.
And, you know, speaking of beats, you have a Kanye moment on the new record. Where you kinda,
yeah.
You criticize older MCs not being able to rap on different types mm-hmm. of beats, right? Of being stuck on like, okay, I came up rapping on this type of song and that's sort of all I can talk over. And the song itself has this kind of trap beat, and you use the kind of triplet flow, whatever, to kind of make your point, I think, right? Mm-hmm.
Some of these 90s MCs just ain't evolved, couldn't adapt to the new beats, baddest couldn't compete, but hey, even T-Rex went extinct, need me, I eat you little niggas up.
How do you challenge yourself to be able to rap over different types of beats?
I just like music, man, and part of it is usually the music will tell you what to say, or if not, somebody's gave you a template so you can kind of see like what to do and what not to do.
Mm-hmm.
So for me, I mean, I wanted to make a point like on that on Kanye moment. I criticize, you know, some of these, you know, 90s MCs couldn't evolve, couldn't adapt to the new beats. Something, but hey, even T-Rex got extinct. And then I go in on.
On a trap beat.
On them. Yeah. No, I go in on the trap rappers. And I'm you know, it sounds like slavery. It makes me ashamed to be black.
Get down like that. And why you niggas sound like that? Nigger music, slavery rap. I cringe. It makes me ashamed to be black.
You know what I'm saying? Like, a lot of what y'all talking about, like, it's nigger music. I say that. It sounds like nigger music. It makes me ashamed to be black. So, I mean, it's a Kanye moment. It gave me an excuse. I think the brilliance of the record is that it's a trap beat. And that I used the pretense of I'm spazzing out like Kanye to rap over a trap beat, to talk shit about trap beats, trap rappers, and talk shit about Kanye, and talk shit about old rappers that can't rap over trap beats. I find it brilliant.
Yeah.
That shit's hilarious.
Yeah.
That shit's fucking great.
And
can't nobody say I didn't burn it.
Right.
Like, can't no trap rap act like I didn't burn it down. It's still kind of commercial. It's fucking hilarious.
Yeah. You have, you know, Solanos 2.0 is mm-hmm. sort of coming. I know Intellectual Property was the first half of that.
Mm-hmm.
You did a online fundraiser
for
Solanos 2.0 that didn't quite make its goal.
It did not.
Didn't got about a third of the way
a
there.
Third,
so
yeah.
Why do you think that was?
I think... The first time I ever tried, the first previously last time I had ever tried it was a Kickstarter for, was it Adidas?
I think so, yeah. I think for Adidas.
And that was early on when nobody was doing it.
In 2010, Raz ran a successful campaign on Kickstarter to raise money for his album, Adidas. He got over $13,000, almost 3.5 times the amount of money he set out to raise.
And I caught kind of a lot of flack. And I think there's just so many people vying for your attention and nothing's novel. And then there's, you know, shit. there's other people trying, you know, shit, De La and, you know, and so and so. And Rick Moranis is going to do, you know what I'm saying? Whatever. Like,
yeah.
I know you looked up like, what the fuck? Yeah. Rick Moranis. I liked fucking Honey, I Shrunk the Kids. So anyway, you know, I do have, that's part of my allure. Very random fucking names and shit like that. Obscure references. Everybody, it's not unique. You need more money to go get pressed to raise money. It's crazy. So, I wish I could activate more people. If I was on, you know, if I was on World Star and they said I was doing it, and then, you know, and then Kanye West said, yo, Razzcast is doing that thing, you should support him. You know, and Jay-Z said it, and then he, you know, he put $10,000 on it, then people would follow suit. And then the Beyonce said, yo, I really like Razzcast, you know, like it's Danger the Threat, and then the record would sell. So people are followers, they, you know, and everybody, aside from that, everybody else is a star themselves. Every chick got a fucking stupid dog face on Instagram. Everybody's a fucking star. I'm sorry. I mean, you know, your five-year-old daughter's doing it. She's in training to be a fucking hood rat. It's fucking horrible out here. Mm. For real. The five-year-old is in training. I don't give a fuck what color she is. She's a young whore in training because they're setting it up for that. And your sons are either in training to be homosexuals, not that there's anything wrong with that, or they're going to be tricks. They're busy trying to show off, look at all this shit, so they're going to do dumb shit, get fucked up, go to jail, because everybody's trying to show everything they can do. What the fuck do you really do every day that you need to show every fucking body? It's really weird. And I'm like the only one looking around like, isn't this getting weird? Everybody's like, no, it's cool, you got to do it, you got to do it. I'm like, this is fucking weird. So I'm the elephant in the room. You know, I call elephants in the room and everybody gets mad at me like, Raz, you're an asshole. I'm like, it's weird. So if society decided tomorrow that you got to circle jerk every fucking body and I say, hey, that's kind of weird, everybody gets mad at me. But I'm not going to circle jerk everybody. It's just not what I want to do. Not that there's anything wrong with that. I just don't want to do it. So I call shit weird and society, you know, they'll figure out that this is some weird, corny shit. But, I mean, you know, trust me, nobody would want to Snapchat when, you know, this motherfucker pushed the button and nuke China and then nuke it. Right. Yeah, like 15 minutes to get it together.
Yeah. Well, speaking of which, you had, so on that Sammy Hendrix record, right?
Mm-hmm.
Even which was, you know, done prior to this election cycle.
Mm-hmm.
You had that line about the Pentagon is the pentagram.
Yeah.
Came first to warn you like a minute man. The Pentagon is inside of a pentagram. I'm feeling like.
And we are 12 days away at the time of this taping from having the Pentagon be controlled by that guy.
Right.
How are you feeling?
Not necessarily pay for, but, you know, I felt like there was some apathy out here, you know, amongst people. I know, you know, I just looked at the numbers. So, you know, blacks didn't go out here and vote and young people didn't vote. They were too busy Snapchatting their dog face. Mm-hmm. So, you know, rich people get richer and middle class people be fucked off. And that's just, you know, we're going to get back to Reaganomics. And that didn't really work out well for people.
Right. true enough. So one last thing. I know you used to be, when you were coming up, the freestyle king.
Oh, yeah.
What was your best freestyle from back then? Can you remember a really good one?
I am so horrible now at remembering raps or freestyling because I write so much nowadays that I don't have time. Like, that's, like, it's really dope when you're with your homeboys and, like, yeah, y'all in the car and you 15, 16, 17, 18, y'all just rhyming and shit. And then life gets real and then you got to, like, pay bills and do shit and do work and your mom wants shit and your sisters need shit. So, I honestly, like, it's crazy because Jerry can tell you, I'm like, oh, okay, so I'm like, can I not rap? I don't remember raps. I have songs. You want to listen to some well-thought-out shit? Awesome, bro. I have lots of it. Yeah, I'm not a good, I write a bit infinitum and never recite them. That's kind of what, that's one thing. And my whole logic is I bleed on, you know, I bleed, it's my therapy. So it's a bit selfish. You know, I write these things to get them out of my system or else, you know, I, you know, run around here tearing my hair out the little bit I do have. But yeah, you know, I just feel like I'm a writer, man. A writer. I'm a writer, and nobody's buying my shit, so why should I have to remember it? Mm-hmm. That's kind of how I feel, bro. Maybe that's fucked up, but I'm like, if you pay me, y'all motherfuckers paid, you know, Kendrick Lamar and Jay-Z and Lil Taffy and whatever the fuck, Lil Wookie and Young Bebe and whoever the fuck you pay him. He can't even say fucking four bars, but... You know, so shit, pay me some fucking money and I'll remember a rap song.
Right, right.
Other than that, it's not performance art. It's listening art. You put it on and you listen to it and feel me. Feel my pain.
And when do we get to hear this David Axelrod song I've heard so much about?
Yeah, The Children?
Mm-hmm.
That's David's song. It's on his album.
Give me the little children. You good, you rich, and you wise. And while the busy world spins around, while you shut your goddamn eyes, and your judges will all have work, and your lawyers will flap their tongues, and your jail guards and cops will be the fathers to your young.
Actually, I was late, and Saul was supposed to, he had to call Saul to replace me, which was crazy. I was late. But David Axelrod, what an idiot. Stupid brass cast back then. Yeah, and he, like, literally, like, fucking 20 children choir, fucking every instrument. And I'm, like, coming in. And it's, like, Saul, and Saul's an amazing poet, you know what I mean? And and David Axelrod is, like, what are you doing, brass cast? I'm, like, I'm sorry, sir. Yeah, and then I did it. And then it was awesome. So it's called The Little Children.
Okay.
It's on David Axelrod's last album, man. I want to go find that band, man. He's such an inspiration. Fucking legend.
Amazing. All right. Well, I want to make sure you can make it to your next thing on time, Russ. Thank you so much. We'll love to have
Thank
you back
you.
At some point.
I will return.
All right.
I'll remember. I'll write a special rap and remember it.
Okay. That sounds good. All right. Thanks a lot, man.
Thank you.
All right.
Appreciate it.
There are very few artists who get the amount of universal love from other artists, critics, and rap industry types the way Razzcast does. When I announced that I had talked to him, people from television, veteran journalists, rappers, label owners, and academics alike expressed their support. And it makes sense. Razz's music is uniquely challenging, smart, and interesting. I'm glad we were able to get into his beginnings here, and I'm especially grateful that we were able to talk about the often overlooked musical side of his output. Join us next week when our guest will be Thurston Howell III. We'll talk to the Puerto Rican about his new book about the infamous lowlifes, Bury Me With The Low On. And of course, we'll discuss his own career as a rhymer. Come for the music talk, but stay for the boosting tips. To make sure you hear each episode of The Cypher as soon as it drops, subscribe on iTunes or your podcast app of choice. Once you do that, you'll also be able to check out our back catalog. If you enjoy this show, for example, you should check out Razz's West Coast pal Bishop Lamont on episode 96. If you use iTunes, it's hugely important to give us a rating and a review. It helps to bring more fans and attention to the show. Also consider helping us out by becoming a patron. Visit us at patreon.com/thecyphershow and sign up. Bringing you a show every week takes a lot of time and effort from me and Josh. And we really need your support to continue to maintain this level of output. If even a quarter of our listeners contributed just $1 a month, it would go a long way towards making the show sustainable. As an added bonus for our patrons, we try monthly to share bonus material that sometimes comes out when talking to our guests after the main interview is over. Become a patron by January 31st to get access to the file. If you want to talk to me or Josh about the show, visit us on social media. We're at The Cypher Show on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook. Let us know what you thought of this episode and who you'd like to see in the future. More information about anything related to the podcast, playlists, our complete archives, and more can be found for free at thecyphershow.com. The Cypher is created and written by Sean Sotero.
I was late to rap and music, period.
The show is produced and engineered by Josh Cross at Crosstown Studios.
It's really dope when you're with your homeboys and like, yeah, y'all in the car and you 15, 16, 17, 18, y'all just rhyming and shit. And then life gets real and then you gotta like pay bills and do shit and do work and your mom wants shit and your sisters need shit.
Our music is by 42 Ghosts.
I wish I would've got a check out of it, you motherfuckers.
Our web guru is Aaron Young.
I tried to teach you how to snap my fingers on beat. I didn't know how to snap my fingers for one. I damn sure couldn't snap them on beat.
Special thanks to Patreon supporter Nathan Paoletta.
I will earn my respect one way or another.
We'll see you next time around on The Cypher.
I said, downtown titty, the dilly bitty, the fool that acts itty, the better, the down, the witty. Come on, man, it's not dumbing down.